From HanselMinutes.com, it's Hansel Minutes, a weekly discussion with web developer and technologist Scott Hanselman. This is Lawrence Ryan announcing show number 298, recorded live Thursday, December 15th, 2011. Support for Hansel Minutes is provided by Telerik RAD Controls, the most comprehensive suite of components for Windows Forms and ASP.NET web applications. Online at www.telerik.com. In this episode of the Framework series, Scott talks with Todd Angling from Telerik about the Kendo UI HTML5 framework.
Hi, this is Scott Hanselman. This is another episode of Hansel Minutes, and we're continuing the Framework series. This week, coincidentally, we've got Telerik on. We're going to be talking about Kendo UI. We've got Todd Angling from Telerik. Of course, if you've listened to the show before, full disclosure, Telerik is a sponsor of the show, amongst other sponsors. But we're having Telerik on because Todd and I bumped into each other, in fact, in Sofia, Bulgaria, at a conference we were speaking at, and it seemed like a good idea, given my interest in HTML5, as well as the framework series, that we have a chat. So FYI, they are a sponsor, but this is an unrelated podcast topic. Todd, thanks for chatting with me today.
Well, it's a pleasure to be on. It's really fun to come talk about something fun like HTML5 and frameworks today.
Yeah, definitely. It's interesting because we're seeing some pretty cool frameworks coming out from all over the place, from maybe unlikely locations. People are really embracing HTML5 in quicker than I think I've ever seen anything get embraced. I'm looking at your website here. It's Kendo, K-E-N-D-O, UI. And this is an HTML5 framework that you've got mobile, you've got tablets, you've got all the latest standards. Explain to me what this is.
Sure. And obviously, I mean, like you said, it's not really commercial, but just so people are aware of what we're doing on the HTML5 front, what Kendo UI really represents is looking at the emerging popularity that we're both really excited about around HTML5 development and JavaScript and the other things that go with that. And recognizing that today, if a developer is setting out to build a professional project, something that kind of represents that traditional business app or a bigger project, a bigger scope, usually means that you start out by looking for a bunch of little libraries and pulling them all together to build your own framework. You may go find Backbone and Knockout, and you're basically just cobbling together this framework before you ever get to the process of actually working on your project. And what we said is that, you know, if you're starting out doing development, you really should have a better starting point. Why can't we bring everything together, focus on building a framework that works together, that's built for performance, all these things that we want when we build software, and deliver that to the HTML5 and JavaScript developer? And that's essentially what Kendo UI is. It's everything that developer needs in one place so they can build on that, they can version it more easily, maintain it more easily, learn it more easily, all those good things. And today we deliver it in three parts. Kendo UI Web, which is the kind of traditional UI stuff people are thinking when they think web software. Kendo UI Data Viz, which is HTML5 powered charts and much more in the future. Mm-hmm. And then Kendo UI Mobile, which is today a preview, but it's where we're going to be doing stuff that's really designed to look native, look specific to different devices like iOS or Android or Windows Phone and things like that in the future. So it's a big surface area, but we think it's a really relevant problem to solve. And as you said, it's in response directly to the fact that this is a really hot area right now where a lot of software development is being done.
Mm-hmm. So let's work our way from the small stuff up to the big stuff. I'm looking at the mobile, and the first thing that I notice is that the controls look like the OS that they're on. So when you hit like a Kendo UI mobile page, and there's a demo you can go and check out on the website, it looks like they're native iPhone buttons. The slider looks like the iPhone. But then I hit it with my Android tablet, and it actually looked like Android. And I was expecting it would look kind of like remember Java like 10 or 15 years ago where basically looked like crap everywhere? But at least
it
was consistent.
Like that, right? Has that changed yet, or is that still the state of affairs?
Well, it still does. But yeah, I mean, it just the buttons looked like weird Java buttons. But of course, We all want native-looking buttons on the same, you know, on I don't want to look like I've gone to a foreign country just because I visited a mobile application on my iPhone.
Right. And actually, you've zeroed in exactly what it is that we're trying to do a little bit differently than some of the other things being done today with HTML5 for mobile. And that is we know that there are some great frameworks out there for doing mobile development with HTML5 and JavaScript, but a lot of them either put the burden on the developer to make the app look right on different devices, or they kind of introduce a new non-native but mobile-friendly look and feel. We recognize that there are a lot of developers, especially businesses, that they want to build apps and they just want to build it once or maintain it more or less once, and generally have it work everywhere and look right everywhere. And that look right part is so important to user adoption, because if it looks like iOS or it looks like, you know, Java from another planet on your Android, that's not going to be well adopted, and people are more likely to reject or not use that app. So what KenUI Mobile does uniquely is that it automatically adapts the layout and the presentation of your application based on the device it's running on. And today, obviously, for our initial focus, we're looking at primarily iOS and Android and phones and tablets within those spaces. But it's a vision that we'll continue to expand on, so that you just worry about your app, the content, the stuff that actually matters to your business, and we'll handle the nuances of the different layout conventions and theming that is native-like for these different devices. That, at least today, is our initial vision. We certainly think that as we get more feedback from the community, where things that our people are having a lot of trouble with, we'll expand on that. But it's an important part of getting your application to look right with HTML5 and JavaScript. Does it look right? And that's what we're looking at here today.
Now, someone might look at this, though, and say, I thought that HTML5 on a mobile device was a solved problem and that jQuery mobile was the answer. What is it? I'm not saying that jQuery mobile is the only answer, as there's, you know, there's Sprout Core and there's dozens of different other attempts at getting a cohesive, complete web library of controls and layouts. But is it not too late to come out with something like this?
Oh, no, definitely not. I mean, we're talking about too late. I think we're still at the beginning ends of how do we get this right for mobile devices in particular. And we think jQuery UI mobile is good. Actually, we like it a lot, and we think a lot of the things that they're doing there are really nice. But we have a little bit different focus and a little different scope than what's happening with jQuery mobile. jQuery mobile is one of those frameworks that does use that kind of third approach, where rather than trying to optimize the UI to look native where it runs, it more or less adopts a look and feel of its own that looks the same everywhere you run it. So where ours looks different where you run it, native to the device, that looks the same everywhere you run it. It's just a little bit different philosophy, but there are a lot of philosophies in the two frameworks that are very similar. The idea of doing your design, your layout through HTML5 convention, so use data attributes to really communicate what various HTML on the page should do when it's rendered on a mobile device. And there are things that would be very familiar to a developer coming from jQuery mobile to working with Kendo UI mobile. In that sense, we think that there is a lot of good overlap. But ultimately, what we're looking to do is, again, pull all the pieces together. So Kendo UI mobile will build on the parts of Kendo UI web and core, like the JavaScript data source and our validation framework and globalization. All the pieces come with it. So you have more than just the UI widgets. I mean, UI is what you see, but there's a lot more going on under the covers that we think solve more of the problems involved with building a complete application, not just the UI of an application.
Right, indeed. And it looks like you've built on the jQuery core, so it feels like a jQuery UI library. It uses the selector syntax that we're familiar with.
Right, yeah.
If I'm a lover of jQuery, this won't feel unfamiliar.
Right. In fact, we're lovers of jQuery as well. So the only external dependency in Kendo UI across the board is jQuery. And we wanted to do that because we wanted the API to be familiar. We like jQuery a lot and it allows us to do some pretty cool things. So if you are a fan of jQuery, and this is kind of what separates, again, Kendo UI from some of the other things that are out there, even beyond the jQuery UI and jQuery mobiles, things that are built on other non-jQuery libraries, by using jQuery, the Kendo UI stuff is very familiar. You do get a lot of these things that you can just pretty much figure out how to use if you know how to use jQuery selectors. So it's a very familiar thing for jQuery developers, and that was by intent, for sure.
One of the things that kind of blows my mind a little bit is how big this is. I mean, I heard about this, and we talked about it a couple months ago when we saw each other, and you were like, yeah, you should really check this out. And, you know, and I think you're the same way. People see you, and they go, hey, you should check this out. But it's just... there's a lot here. Like, it's big. It's like disturbingly huge. You have not five controls, but like everything. You've got grids and tab strips and all this kind of goes on and on and on and on and on. Is this how are you doing this? Are you doing this with a whole lot of contributors or are there monkeys or robots? I mean, how many people are doing this
we
work?
We have advanced Bulgarian robots that we've designed that pound on keyboards, and through a randomness filter, we get the tools we want.
I'm not trying to shine you on, but I'm just saying that it is much bigger than I thought it would be.
culture. And the result of that is really born out of just actually a lot more work than it might seem. What goes into a Kendo UI in this case is really the experience we built up for about a decade of building professional tools that primarily deal with HTML and JavaScript. Telerik as a company got its start creating web forms controls, which a lot of people know Telerik for, the ACE.NET web forms controls. And at the end of the day, while there is a lot of .NET involved there and a lot of the stuff you do to make the server control part of that work, it's ultimately spitting out HTML and JavaScript and CSS that has to work across all browsers. So we started working with the idea of how do you build professional HTML and JavaScript, you know, a decade ago when everybody else was just focused on the .NET and server control parts of this. And over those years, we've learned a lot. And while we learn a lot of lessons, the reality is that once you ship something, you can't really go back and reboot or restart and do it in a different or better way because you've got to support what's out there. So we had the Ajax controls, and then we introduced the ACE.NET MVC extensions about 2 or 3 years ago, around the time that MVC itself came out.
Right.
And that was one of our chances to kind of reboot with all the lessons we'd learned up to that point. And we built the extensions natively for ACE.NET MVC. Most of what was happening there was already beginning to happen client-side. We were using jQuery. Most of what the MVC server extensions were doing was outputting the necessary HTML that would then get initialized by our client-side code. So when it came time to work on Kendo UI, where we really were saying, let's cut the tie to the server. Let's make a framework that is all client-side JavaScript HTML5, and you can bring whatever server framework you want to the party. If it's ACE.NET MVC, if it's PHP, whatever it is, you can use Kendo UI. We were able to take a lot of that work we'd already done for things like ACE.NET MVC and then roll it into a good starting point for what we did with Kendo UI. And they're not identical. There was obviously a lot of changes. We had one more chance, again, to take lessons we'd learned and do things even better than where we rebooted on MVC. And that's how we were able to start so quickly. And then on top of that, Kendo UI has been in development for about 18 months. And we've got a professional team of guys, really senior guys. I think it's roughly 8 or 10 engineers working on this. And they've had 18 months to really put together some impressive stuff. And they'll only keep doing more of that as we head into the future. So it's just on the back of a lot of hard work. No monkeys, no robots. And we hope to keep doing more of it in the future.
I see. So that's good to know. So this is 18 months of work. Because sometimes projects come out and they come out with a slick looking website, some cool demos, and you kind of wonder, how did they bust this out in a couple of weeks, or, you know, how did this happen? This sounds like this has been not just 18 months, but also the, you know, like you said, bringing in intellectual property and stuff that you were doing on MVC. When I remember playing with the Telerik MVC stuff, like I said, 3 years ago.
Right.
There's a lot of stuff underneath this.
We learned a lot of the important lessons about what to do and what not to do in each of those iterations, and MVC was a good one because it got us very close to where we wanted to be with Kendo UI. So, you know, one of the biggest things people reference, obviously, when they start working with JavaScript is a grid. I mean, grids are kind of ubiquitous, maybe more so than they should be, but they are what they are in business software. And doing a grid client-side with JavaScript has all kinds of different problems, especially when you want to do occasional syncing back to the server or you need to do server-side data operations. And we were able to learn a lot about the kinds of things you need to do that effectively when there's no kind of prescribed server page lifecycle like we used to do with the ACE.NET web forms days. So it gave us a lot of the kind of head start we needed to be able to deliver a really powerful grid, and then a lot of the other, you know, I call them simpler just because relative to a grid they are, things like menus and panel bars and all these other kinds of things. But there's still a lot of work in those to make sure that they work the way you expect them to across all browsers and really all the way back to IE7. And that was one of the big things we decided during the process of building this. We had to decide how far back do we need to keep supporting old browsers. And we ran some surveys. We talked to the community and got some really interesting feedback. And we ultimately decided after the first beta that IE7 would be kind of our backstop browser for Kendo UI. When we first launched, we actually had built-in support for IE6, but we had so much feedback that people preferred to not have those kind of long-living hacks and CSS things be part of the framework that we decided to kind of move that bar up to IE7. So it ultimately means that if you work with Kendo UI, if you've got a latest and greatest HTML5 browser, you're going to get a little bit of extra richness and things like the upload control. But if you've got IE7, you're still going to get a functional experience that pretty much looks the same as any other browser.
Yeah. Yeah. It's good that you did that. It's a tough, I mean, it's a tough decision for corporate people, but at the same time, it's the right decision. There's no reason to be supporting a browser that is that old.
Yeah, it's a tough one. And there was some interesting feedback from the community when we ran the surveys and asked people to share their opinion. And you know, we had a handful, and I'd say, like, literally I could count them on one hand, three or four people that really needed IE6 support, but the majority were really ready for IE6 support to be cut. They were already on things like IE8. And we had a lot of people at the end of it kind of clamoring to cut IE7, and let's just kind of get to the IE8 baseline and work from there. And we still recognize there's a lot of IE7 out there, a lot of IE8 especially, so you know, we're going to do our best to make sure we support as many of the relevant browsers that are out there today. But the pace browsers are changing. We certainly hope, being advocates of HTML5 in general, that more and more people can upgrade and progress along so the whole industry can do things faster without continuing to need all this legacy support.
Switching to the source a little bit, I was chatting last week's show with Apostolos, who's a guy from DevExpress, who has an open source project called Expand that extends some of the things that DevExpress does. So not just Telerik is moving into open source. Really, every component vendor has a commercial arm of the things that they want to get paid for, but then they have an open source arm. Kendo UI is open source, or it's dual license? How's that set up?
Yeah, it's dual license. So Kendo UI, much like the Telerik extensions for H.NET MVC were before it, is a dual license library, which basically means that it's available under two different licenses depending on the requirements of your project. So there's an open source license, which is GPL v3, and then there's a commercial license, which is the more traditional, you pay us money, you get support, you get hotfix updates, and you get the things that basically put food on our table at the end of the day so we can keep coming to work and building these tools. And the decision ultimately comes down to what is the compatibility of your project. If your project is GPL compatible, then there's an open source license there. And we introduced the open source license, especially when we're working with HTML and JavaScript, because there's so much cool stuff happening in the open source space for this field, through the kind of pragmatic idealism that has been espoused around the GPL. You know, we want to support people that are involved in open source. But if you're involved in commercial projects, obviously we are involved in commercial software as well, so we want to make sure we can pay the bills. And that's really why we have dual licensing. We really love what's being done in the open space. We want to support it. We want to put the code out there. But we also want to make sure that we can all work together, continuing to be professional developers, which means we get paid for our development into the future.
Why GPL and not something more, MIT or BSD or Apache, something a little lighter, a little less frightening to commercial vendors?
Sure. You know, I think there's no question that, you know, you could probably do, and you probably have done, many shows over the differences in the open source licenses and the chaos that comes from trying to sort through all that. And we spent a lot of time internally, probably months, trying to really determine what is the best way to do a dual license product like this. And we talked about things like MIT and BSD and the copy-free licenses, as they're often called. And obviously GPL, one of its hallmarks is that it's a copyleft license as opposed to copy-free, which is what tends to introduce a lot of the fear of people that don't fully understand it. And the reason we went that route is because GPL, in this case, really embraces what our intent is with having an open-source license. You know, copy-free is okay for some projects where the main intent is primarily to put it out there and then just kind of turn it loose and let the world do what they want to do with it. And our intent is more about supporting open source projects with the products that we've created. So, we want to support open source projects that are trying to create other new open source things that are benefiting software developers in general, benefiting the world in general. But it's not really our intent to put our effort out there and then compete against it, if you understand in that regard. So we felt GPL best married what our objective was with the open source licenses that are out there that are well defined, that corporations do have an understanding. We didn't want to go create some new license. And so it just all ended up that GPL v3 was most compatible with our goals for open source. And the other licenses are great and they're good for different things. It just didn't make sense for our project.
Yeah, that's an interesting thing. I'm not typically a fan of GPL, but at the same time, your point is that GPL is in a truly open source by using the kind of the Stallman term, open source project,
sure.
That's supportive of GPL, then hey, great, use the product, no problem. But it's scary enough that it encourages commercial use at the same time in the sense of like, buy a reasonably priced commercial license and you don't have to worry about it. And if you really, really want to go all open source, that's available too. if it was something like Apache or MSPL, then there's no reason for someone to pay.
Right. You know, and certain companies are set up in different ways, and I've tried to share this with others in the past. You know, a company that creates something that, you know, has professional teams of people involved in creating a product and then makes it available under something like MIT or one of the copy-free licenses, it's mm-hmm. traditionally more set up to make their money on doing things like consulting or training services. They're really ultimately developers that are in business being professional trainers or professional consultants. And Telerik is just, as a company, configured to be a professional software developer. We are good at creating and supporting software. And so to remain being good at that, that's kind of what our whole process is built around. And so we have we don't primarily operate off selling support or selling consulting. So we sell our tools. And in that regard, that's where GPL and the commercial license most align with not only just how we want to put the software out there, but also just how we're structured to operate. You know, to be completely frank, I'd love if Kendo UI could be in every project out there. You know, I really would. But at the end of the day, the reality is it is not the most compatible with copy-free projects. You know, if you're doing an MIT copy-free project, well, I love that, and I really admire the kind of work being done there, but unfortunately, it just doesn't really marry well with the licensing we have with Kendo UI.
Right, right. And sometimes Microsoft gets criticized for doing what people say is not open source, but rather source opened.
Sure.
We'll say that, hey, look, this is open source, but really it's that the source is available and you can fork it, but we won't take takebacks. And that seems to be kind of an ongoing issue with commercial companies. Do you have any intent to do takebacks at this point, or is that still something that's being worked on?
Yeah, it is really a work in progress, and it's not something that we're actively against by any stretch. Anytime you start dealing with any of this stuff, I'm sure it's only magnified when you talk about a company like Microsoft. The lawyers get involved, right? And that's the big question of, you know, when you take these contributions and then you've got the liability attached to Microsoft, who has money to be sued if something comes up. You know, that's where the things get hairy. But for us, we would like to enable people to contribute, and we've talked about different ways to do that. We haven't established a way to do it here at the initial launch, and part of that was just from some of the experience we had with our last open source offering with MVC. We put the Telerik extensions for ASP.NET MVC out under a dual license as well. And when we first launched that, we did work with the community to kind of embrace the idea of accepting contributions and, you know, kind of feel out where the interest was there. And there just was very little. And, you know, you could associate that with the GPL license, you know, not being MIT and other things. But I think the reality is, even when you look at big projects, the number of people that actually contribute to those projects tends to be a pretty small core group of passionate people. And when you have a product that's being evolved by a professional team, you know, often there's a little bit less need for somebody in the community to get really passionate about it because the product team is full-time focusing on improving that product. And in the case of something like Kendo UI, they're very likely going to ship the improvements that you want in the next release, which for us, 3 releases per year, it's, you know, 4 months, and you're going to have those features in the product. So, you know, I think there's a set of circumstances that come together around the software we ship. We update it very frequently. We've got professional people looking at it all the time. And that tends to, I think, discourage people from getting really passionate about creating those contributions. But to your core question, yeah, we'd like to enable it to the GPL version of Kendo UI, and I think we're going to be continuing to look at that. And if we can create a process, if we can find the interest, we absolutely do want to enable people to get involved with Kendo UI as much as they want to.
Now, it's split up into 3 pieces here. There's web, data visualization, and mobile. And while mobile is the one that's kind of exciting and sexy, and I must say that I think that the mobile demo is pretty amazing because it's got this, it's cool. You're looking at it on your desktop and then this hand comes up, this like perfectly photographed hand holding the device you want. And then you pick the mobile device and it comes up with a new mobile device. It's a pretty cool demo. You should check it out. But you've got the mobile stuff, but also web and data viz. When I did the data viz or data visualization one, I kept right clicking on the charts because I thought they were flash.
Right. Yeah, those are some cool things. And I think DataViz today is sort of a footprint of where we want to go. It certainly doesn't represent where we think the end goal is. It's primarily some chart types built on HTML5, things like pie charts and bar charts. But we've already started to introduce some of the rich things you can do with HTML5, like animation, so that when the chart loads, it's not just a static image, which could be mistaken for an image. It's very clearly dynamic and engaging. It's something your users can look at and really digest the data in interesting ways. And so It's all HTML5. There are no plugins involved here. In fact, under the covers, we're using SVG and VML so that we can deliver very broad browser support. And, the reason we went that route, of course, is because we want it to work everywhere. And that's really part of the idea of HTML5 is I can create this software with data visualization and it'll work just as well on my desktop browser as it does on my iPad, where clearly there are no plugins allowed. And that extends to Android and other things, obviously, in the future. So this is the idea with DataViz for Kindle UI is delivering that same kind of richness you do traditionally associate with plugins, but delivering it in a way that can be used on tablets, devices, desktops alike.
Yeah, I think that this is a good opportunity. Looking at frameworks like this is a good opportunity for people who maybe have been thinking about HTML5 but haven't actually gotten around to doing it to really understand what's possible. I mean, even myself, and I feel like I'm pretty steeped in HTML5 lately. We've been just we eat, sleep, drink it, you know. I'm still sure. Consistently impressed with the stuff. And I can even tell you guys at Microsoft are always, you know, right click. Is that, they did do that. You know what I mean?
Right.
That's, it's funny. I was talking to Chris Sells. I think you actually just hired Chris Sells, recently.
Correct.
To come work at, Telerik. I was talking to him last night and he said, you know, HTML5 is a confusing and complex mess. But it's an extremely capable, confusing, and complex mess. And I think that was Chris's very wise way of saying, definitely don't count HTML5 out. You can do some crazy stuff with it.
Yeah, you opened up when we talked today about, you know, how unusually fast HTML5 is being adopted and how fast it's evolving. And whenever I talk to people about that, you know, why is that happening, you know, I just list the name of companies that are more or less behind in endorsing and embracing HTML5. So Apple, Google, Microsoft, Adobe, I'm probably leaving somebody out here, Amazon is another one. I mean, these are tech vendors, major tech vendors, that you don't usually list as being on the same page. They're usually in some way or another working against each other. And here you've got them all essentially working in agreement, not necessarily explicitly, but certainly implicitly, around the same, as you said, UI layer, HTML5 and CSS. And that's pretty remarkable. So, you know, whether the improvements come from Microsoft or they come from Google or whoever, there's a huge amount of investment from very big players in this space around the same core technologies, which I think is what is helping really accelerate that evolution of the tooling, certainly of the browsers, the runtimes as they are. And that's why it's exciting to be part of it. It's definitely in its early days, and as more and more people get focused on it, I think the whole space is going to become a lot richer.
Definitely, definitely. Interestingly, I was looking at, where do I get the code?
For Kindle UI?
Yeah, so for Kindle UI, do I have to make an account to get that, or is this hosted like at GitHub or somewhere I can find the source?
Yeah, to download the source today, you just have to log in to the Kindle UI website, and we've got a simple package there that includes all the examples, all the source code and everything. And you know, that was another process we went through early on. You know, where and how do you get these things? We actually do develop all of Kindle UI on GitHub, so our dev team actually uses GitHub itself for all of its work on the Kindle UI product. But there are just certain complexities we're still working through to how do we expose that more directly. But for today, if you want the source, simply log in to kindleui.com. If you don't have an account, quick and easy to create one, and you can download the whole source. And I know some people get frustrated with the registration and login to download things, but, you know, to us, to the people we want to talk to, professional software developers, you know, all we're asking is please trade letting us know who you are with letting us give you everything we've ever done. We think it's a pretty simple and fair trade, and if you can do that, then we hope we can help you be more productive as you develop software.
I assume you're not going to spam them. You just want to understand what they need and stuff like that, right?
Right, absolutely. I mean, we're developers, too. We're not in the business of spamming. We just want to make sure that we're talking to professional people, and I think professional people generally understand the fair trade and that information for software tools. So at the end of the day, we're trying to make the best tools we can and make the best stuff out there for HTML, JavaScript developers. And to do that, we just need to understand, you know, who's using it, how many people are using it, all these various things. And by having people log in to download, we're able to understand, okay, there's this absolute number of people working with it, as opposed to there's this one guy who's downloaded it 10,000 times in his basement, and that skews some of the numbers.
One of the things that we're always thinking about at Microsoft and the web platform team that I work on, I was actually up in Seattle yesterday thinking about this, was that what does a Kendo UI or a third-party commercial vendor library that's built entirely on JavaScript look like in an ASP.NET world or in a, you know, whatever your web framework of choice is? Like, have widgets moved completely from the server side to the client side, and that's the way that things are going to be? Would someone ever want to still have a visual designer and drag data grids and calendars around, except rather than making server-side code, they would create, for example, Kendo UI web stuff? I mean, as you kind of guys dip your toes into this client-side world, while you are traditionally a big component vendor, do you think about those same kind of issues, and do you have any thoughts about where you're going to go with it?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of platform guidance that especially in the Microsoft space, developers really need to understand, because when you're developing in the Microsoft stack in particular, there are a lot of different options, whether you're talking MVC and web forms as different varieties of ASP.NET or Silverlight, WPS, if you're moving to XAML. And I think if you were to look at web development in general, the trend has been over the last several years towards increasingly client-side processing. And that's not only what we saw through the increasing adoption of JavaScript to do more and more of an application's front-end processing, but we also saw that with Silverlight. Whatever else it may be, Silverlight represented a shift to putting more of the execution of .NET code and processing onto the client and having this kind of lightweight communication layer back to the server for persistence and workflow and those kinds of things. So I think that the trend is absolutely towards moving things into the client, because clients are powerful, clients can do more. The more you can do in the client, the less round-trip latency you introduce into applications, which with the explosion of mobile and mobile bandwidth, that's a big problem again. You know, if you have something as simple as validation and you require a server round-trip to really apply that validation consistently, that's going to introduce a huge amount of lag and round-trip time into your mobile app and probably destroy the experience. So from simple things like that to more complex things that we can now do with JavaScript in the UI, it's all about just improving the end user experience. And I think it's a trend that will continue. So if you're a server developer, if you're working with ASP.NET web forms, let's say, I don't think that this is something you can have to view as a threat. And I think that's the one nice thing about HTML5 in general. It's all backwards compatible. You can easily use it side by side with anything you're doing today with HTML. And we toss around the term HTML5 very freely, but clearly it's just HTML4 plus new stuff. And you can easily use it side by side. And a lot of the server control vendors, Telerik as well, clearly being part of this group, are already baking in HTML5 in different ways into our server controls. So if you use the Telerik extensions for ASP.NET MVC and you don't like HTML and JavaScript, you're very likely already using the CSS3 and HTML5 that we're rendering for you. Same for web forms and AJAX. So you know, some of this will just start to transparently happen for the server developer. They'll use their abstractions, they'll use server controls, and those abstractions will render the metal technologies, HTML, CSS, and JavaScript, and they'll sort of rise with the tide. Their controls will take them into the future. Or they can start mixing some of this stuff side by side. If they have some really complex workflows that are server-driven and it would just be too hard to refactor into client code, those can continue to be server-driven, but maybe they have some simpler scenarios in their applications, which could cut out some of that server round-tripping, some of that page post-backing, and they could do it with simple web services and client-side UI. Something like Kendo UI allows you to come in, introduce that client-side UI that can render an update on the client, and give you the power you need to have that without all the traditional post-backs that you require with server controls. So I think it's a model that is the future in many ways, but is not a threat to people that are comfortable and familiar with server-side development. It's easy to add on, and it's easy to use in a compatible way with people who are doing with server-side development.
Very cool. Well, people can check this out at Kendo, KENDOUI.com. I'll put links up in the show notes. And Todd, I really appreciate you coming on and talking to us about this framework.
Well, thanks for having me on. It's a lot of fun, and I hope people do check it out. And certainly, you know, we're not an island, so people check it out, and there's things they like, things they hate. They can always email me, and I'm free to give out my email address, anglin@telerik.com, and I'd love to hear the feedback, and we're here to help people be successful.
Very cool. This has been another episode of Hansel Minutes, and we'll see you again next week.